Chattanooga Choo Choo. Run it down again. Let's go. One, two.
So hi and welcome to the Movies You Love podcast, the podcast where every couple of weeks I sit down and talk with another film enthusiast. I've told you guys previously, I adore that term more than cinephile, more than film lover, more than writer, more than anything. If you like films, you're a film enthusiast. About the time they fell in love with movies. And, you know, we kind of get into it in this episode. It's kind of interesting that it took me 31 episodes for someone to not only bring up a movie of this ilk, but to question the very existence of the show. Where, while I think I've been pretty open about what I want this show to be and what I want the conversations to kind of encapsulate, I don't think anyone's really ever contested it, where they're like, look, it's kind of strange to say that there has to be one movie. And I've always admitted this, because even when I send out the initial emails to people inviting them on, I'll tell them that, you know, I have this little simple rule about not repeating films. And the only reason why I feel okay about that is A, no one's ever said, ah, my movie's taken, I will never be on this show. And B, I believe that there's never ever one movie that did it for you. There might be one that did it more than the others, or there are probably like five different stories between five different movies, so there's always going to be something for you to talk about. And hell, if you bring up the other movies, I'm not going to stop you, but it's just to have that one focal point makes it kind of easy to engage in the conversation a lot better for me. But I was thinking a lot listening back to this episode about that limiting scope of the show and of each episode, where I'm like, we're just going to talk about this one movie. And I wonder if that actually affects the guests coming on, because I think for the most part, most of the times where we kind of go off into the unknown, go off into other topics of conversation, sometimes into other movies in this podcast, I'm generally the one kind of guiding them there. And I wonder if the guest kind of feels a little restricted, like they have to stay in the box of the one movie they picked. And I want to say this out loud for you guys listening, if you're that person who feels constricted, don't. Feel free to be like, oh, we're talking about a movie, and then, oh right, there was that time where I saw that other movie, and feel free to open up. But more to the point, I'm just kind of happy that I'm having these conversations again, and I'm still doing it. But getting into the show, this week I brought in a writer from Badass Digest. His name is Evan Sadoff. He might go by the title of Sam Strange from time to time over on the website of Badass Digest, but he's here to talk about one of his all-time favorite movies, and it's the 1998 film Babe, Pig in the City, directed by George Miller. And we get into a lot of topics about Babe, Pig in the City, and about madcap movies, and about even George Miller, and even the idea of horrible action direct-to-video movies, which, guys, some of you guys know this, I probably know a little bit too much about some of those horrible action movies at this point, but I'm going to keep finding out more about them as I go along in life. Anyways, I don't really have much of an intro other than what I said so far, but yeah, definitely go and check out Evan on Badass Digest. Go and read his writings, he's fantastic. And as always, you can find this show, the Movies You Love podcast, on iTunes. Go and rate, review, subscribe to it there, and let me know. Anyways, here's the conversation we had, and I hope you enjoy.
This is the farm. Peaceful, calm, civilized. But now, the only chance to save the farm is for one little pig.
He can't leave. They're my lucky pig.
To go to the city.
You can't leave. You can't leave.
Anybody home? Anybody else?
Nobody. Let me in. Let me in.
He's entered a world of outcasts and misfits.
Who are these losers?
Well, hey, slow down. If you had a cat, stay and chat.
I'm hungry.
Hi, Evan, and thanks so much for joining me tonight. It's it's a really interesting day when someone comes on this podcast and asks me to talk about a movie about talking animals. And I'd like to thank you for breaking that, whatever rule that was about this show, into this wonderful world of Babe, Pig in the City. What I always like to start off with, talking to my guests about their films, is talking about the first time you actually saw this movie. This movie came out in 1998. Were you, you weren't a theatrical viewer for this, were you?
No, I was not. I was a renter. Okay, well, let me lay it down for you. I loved Babe, the first Babe. I still do. I didn't see it theatrically either. I rented it a lot. When Babe, Pig in the City came out, I live in a really small town. So if the movie was even just a little bit obscure, we didn't get it. We didn't. I don't think Babe, Pig in the City really was that obscure just because it didn't do well, but I guess it was obscure enough that Pittsburgh, Kansas didn't get it. I didn't see it theatrically. So I had to wait for it to come out on video. And I knew what day it was coming out. And I stayed home sick from school. And so I watched it. I was 17. And I was home with Dad. And he was like, not into the idea of watching this talking animal movie, but I was like, hey, the first one's so great. And so that's it. I stayed at home from school, sick from school, and watched Babe, Pig in the City for the first time.
So did you actually force your dad to watch Babe, Pig in the City, or was he just kind? Did he just kind of shrug you off at that point where you were like, I want to watch Babe too?
I think he watched it with me. He drove me to the video store so I could rent it. And I think he watched it with me. I don't think he had a reaction, though. I don't think he cared, even after he saw it. But I didn't make him. He could have done anything else in the world. But he sat there. And
So coming into Babe 2, a huge fan of the Babe franchise, which Hollywood all knows we're ready for the reboot, right? We're ready for it to happen. They're doing it to everything else. Why not?
Well, the voice of Babe just died, so that's gonna be a problem, maybe.
No, we just need to start over for fresh. Everyone, we start over fresh. We can't do all this legacy work. A whole new Babe. George Miller's allowed to come back because he's George Miller and he's already doing it for Mad Max. Why not for Babe? Being a huge fan of the first film, even at the age of 17, was this a movie which immediately had an impression on you?
Babe, Pig in the City, the second one?
Yeah.
Very much so, because I loved the first one because it was so beautiful, and I loved the way it was told, almost, you know, like a fairy tale. I like talking animals, I gotta admit. I don't know why that is, but I do. So I was already in the bag as far as that goes. But Babe, Pig in the City is a different story. Literally, it's a different story. I mean, it has the beauty and the fairy tale aspects of it, but it's such a different film. So I was very shaken by it because it's not a easy film. It has rough parts, especially around the middle. It starts getting way darker than you would expect, and I was shocked by some of it. I remember being very, very shocked by the drowning dog scene in particular, first time I saw it. But I was also blown away by the big climax with all the bouncy the bouncy suit that she wears and how well that was done. And it was exciting. I think when I say I love talking animals, I should be more specific. I love talking apes. And if you love apes and talking apes in particular, this is almost no better movie. I mean, except for maybe the Planet of the Apes stuff, but I might even like this one better. So the arc that the apes have, especially Thelonious, I found very moving. And yeah, I loved the movie immediately. I knew it was a weird movie immediately, and it was a special movie. immediately, and I fell in love with it, and I've been in love with it ever since. And only in the last, it took a while for other people to, for me to hear other people mention it as a good movie. For a very long time, I was alone with my Babe in the Pig City, Babe Pig in the City love, and I spent a lot of time showing it to people who doubted me, and then watched their faces fall every time that dog almost drowns. And
do you find it easy to show this movie to people? Do you, when those people are like over and you're like, I want to watch Babe Pig in the City, are they contesting you at that point, or are you more selective about who you share it with?
Boy, I don't know. Here's the deal about that loaded ass question. Is I'm 33. I don't have friends really anymore. I'm not showing people movies that often. The other thing that's changed in the last 15 years or so is that most people that know movies now know about Babe Pig in the City. You're going to have to talk to, like, I think a real novice to get that look of doubt when you bring it up as a great movie. I think most people know its reputation, even if they haven't seen it. So yeah, that used to be the case. But when I say used to be the case, I mean like probably that probably stopped in like 2004 or something, you know? And then people got wind of it would being kind of a special movie. So now I doubt I'd have to convince people unless they just like were not movie people at all. Those people, I guess, would still be doubtful, and I could show it to them, but I don't hang out with anybody like that.
you don't have the trouble of them looking at you in the face saying, I'm not looking at talking pigs this evening. You're
not in a long, long time.
No. Now, you mentioned this movie being one of those movies that's been rediscovered over the years, something where people at the time maybe didn't love as much, or it wasn't as huge as talked about. You didn't even get it in your small town. And then suddenly, as the years went by, people started recognizing it as a special film. And oddly enough, looking, like, I just spent like a few hours just kind of scrolling through the internet to find people writing about this movie, because honestly, this is a movie that I remember when it came out, and I saw it on VHS, and I was a big fan of Babe, but I don't think I've ever gone back to either of these movies until now when you asked us to talk about this, and it was never something that I thought too heavily on. But as I go through the internet, there are very few people I see actually giving it any sort of shining any light on it as a movie which is just this weird, unique craziness that it is. I'm wondering, you say that you don't really have those moments where you're sharing it with people and they're discovering it, but what do you get from people as they talk to you about this movie when it comes up in conversation?
They talk about how badass it is. You know, I mean, like, they reference it on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I remember, where there's a pig and somebody's about to kill the pig and they don't want to, and they say, you know, just think it's like Babe, and what the nerdy guy is like, Babe Pig in the City is a really underrated movie. I think that was the first time I heard it referenced in a positive way. And then since then, I do hear it all the time. My friend Andrew Todd, who also writes for Badass Digest, he did a whole, before I even met him, he did a whole nerd rap at Fantastic Fest all about Babe Pig in the City. And people knew, you know, what he was talking about. When it came out, Ebert loved it. I think one of them called it like their favorite movie of the year or second favorite movie of the year. Both of them were big on the Babe movies. But I'm wondering if Siskel was alive when the second one came out. I don't think he was, but I know he was for the first one. But Ebert really, really liked it. It was embraced by some, but I just know that more people that I am around are more, you know, they're aware of it. It seems to have grown a for real cult kind of movement around it, like some movies still do every once in a while.
So you write for Badass Digest, and one of the things that I'm actually a huge fan of reading on Badass Digest are your articles as the character Sam Strange.
Yeah.
And oddly, and something about when you emailed me and mentioned this movie just made me think, of that character of Sam Strange, of someone who likes to talk in superlatives and talk about some of the more zany elements of Hollywood filmmaking.
Yeah.
I'm very interested, and I need to stop saying that term. I feel bad about it.
You have a problem saying the word interested?
I have a problem saying the word interested.
Why?
I don't know. I feel more and more that I overuse the word to the point where people who overuse the word literally can make fun of me for overusing the word interesting.
Hmm. That's very interesting. I can say it. I got no problem.
You're not. You don't have the problem. I have the problem.
It's like I can have as many drinks as I want because I don't have a problem.
You don't have a problem. So what I was going towards was I wanted to ask, like, how do you feel a movie like this impacted you in the way that you view movies, especially given the way that you write about movies currently?
Well, I don't know about the writing part of it, how that enters into it. But I'll tell you why I picked this, okay? There's a couple reasons. Really, the movie that changed the game for me is probably a movie that changed the game for a lot of people, and I think it's already been on your show, and that's Pulp Fiction.
Actually, it hasn't, but...
It hasn't?
No one's taken Pulp Fiction yet.
Tell you what, I don't even really want to talk about it.
That's so, perfectly fine.
But that's 1994. That was when I started looking at movies differently and exploring a lot of new people, and that was a very exciting time, Pulp Fiction. Now, I didn't want to talk about Pulp Fiction, and I thought I saw it on that list. I guess I just assumed. So I wanted something different than Pulp Fiction. The other one would be Diary of a Mad Black Woman, the Tyler Perry movie. That I would say that, I guess, qualifies as adding some new direction to what I did, and close enough to changing my life. But the thing is, I've been talking about that stuff for such a long time. I'm sick of it. So, Babe, Pig in the City. That was the one that I jumped to next. Because what I'm most excited to do as a writer, so not in the way I write, but just like as someone who can write and people will read it, is find a movie that's misunderstood, that people think they're smarter than, and therefore discount, and yet I know there's something to it, and then I want to share it. Those are the kinds of movies I want to share. It's kind of like a lot of the same thing that's behind the whole Tyler Perry thing. I want people to know about him, because if we're all so into weird movies, you should know about the weirdest filmmaker working right now. But no one, you know, does, because they hate him before they even, like, really watch much of his stuff. Babe, Pig in the City, same way. Oh, it's this talking pig movie that didn't make money, and it's a sequel to Babe. No, I'm not going to watch that. And I love being able to say you really should, because it's a crazy movie, and it's excellent, and it will blow you away. It's like it's one of the darkest children's films I've ever seen in my life. And so that drive to share it is a big part of what I feel like I do with the most enthusiasm as a writer. And this is the first movie that was really like that for me, because I did push it pretty hard. You know, I saw it when I was like 17. Through most of my early 20s, I showed it to lots of people, people who thought they were too cool for school. And then they got schooled. And I was into that. So, and that's, I still try to do stuff like that. Now I'm pushing DTV Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. I wish more people watched those, because they're excellent, most of them. So, you know, that's just something I really have a lot of passion for, I guess, is to take something that people think is stupid out of hand and discover that it's not. Sometimes it is, and I can't do much with it, but it's not. And then share it with them, just shove it down their throats. Babe, Pig in the City was the first time, so that's, I guess, why it was a watershed movie for me in that regard, as much as it was a watershed movie. This term changed my life is a dramatic term.
It definitely is a dramatic term. Like, it very much is that. And
that's when I realized I was a woman hiding in a man's body.
And slightly, like, I almost think I shouldn't even say this now, but I feel kind of happy that this was the movie you picked over the other two, because Pulp Fiction is one of my favorites. I'm a huge Tarantino guy. And everyone kind of already understands that narrative of the person, like, or maybe it's because I understand that narrative because I'm that person who used Tarantino as a way to get into movies. Watching movies made by a guy who loved movies, who loved weird movies, you're like, oh, that kind of makes sense. I want to learn more about that. Tyler Perry, now that's a very weird and interesting way to go, but Babe Pig in the City almost feels even more daring. Right? As to be like, that's the movie I'm going to challenge you to realize why you should love movies.
Well, I don't know, challenge you to realize that's why you love movies in general?
No, just like, alright, this is the way that I look at it, right? Like, everyone likes movies or loves movies one way or another, whether it be that guy who really, really loves to watch Transformers 20 times a year, and I really don't mean to sound bad about saying that. Or whether you're that guy who's just pumping down the Criterion Collection.
Right.
When I feel there's also a certain point in time with people where they realize that they're passionate about something, whether it just be about enjoying the entertainment of it, whether it just be the understanding of something else about it, whether it's just the fact that you don't know why it is that every 90 minutes you spend in front of that screen, you're just enjoying yourself, and you want to find out more about that. And I view that as what you say, the watershed moment, or the dramatical moment, that moment where you realize there's something happening there to you, and you want to find out more about that thing inside. It's not just the movie itself, but the feeling that you're having at that point in time, which is kind of what I'm trying to go towards with this show and with the conversations I have with everyone, which is I'm trying to find out what it was for you in that moment, finding that out about yourself and how it propelled you forward.
Oh, well, I nailed it.
You nailed it. So does that mean that it's over, the show's over, we figured it out? You've cleared it up for everyone. And anyone after this, they're just...
Yeah, if that's the shape of this house, then we built it. Did you watch the movie this week?
Yes, I did. I rewatched Babe and Pig in the City.
What do you think of Pig in the City?
I thought it was a madhouse of something unique, but I don't quite think that I'd say I like it.
Oh, man.
Like, it's very strange. And the thing about it is almost that I felt I walked in with a lot of pre-knowledge the moment that... And, of course, I didn't know this when I was a child and I saw the movie. The moment that I looked at it and I'm like, holy shit, George Miller made this movie? What the frig is going on here?
Well, and he also made Happy Feet, you know?
I, to be quite honest, to this day still haven't seen Happy Feet.
But you know he made it. I mean, you know he made two animated kids films as well.
He didn't. All I knew George Miller about was Mad Max.
Oh, he also made Lorenzo's Oil and The Witches of Eastwick. But he made the Mad Max trilogy and the fourth one coming out. But he has this in him too. And well, I didn't mean to interrupt you what you were going for, but keep going. You didn't know it was a George Miller movie.
I didn't know, and oddly enough, looking at this movie when I saw it, I kept paying attention to all of the darker bits more than I was paying attention to the weird happy moments. You talked about the when Babe saves the dog from drowning, and that is one hell of a moment.
Yeah, it's terrifying, I think.
It is, and what I kind of like the most about this movie is the idea that children's movies all do this. They all want to be idealistic, and they all want to tell children that they should look into interesting worlds and love it. But this movie tells you that you should never never turn yourself into a world that doesn't look like what you thought it would.
Yeah, but Babe does wear the spiked collar.
He does wear the spiked collar, and he does get to be the king of the house for like 5 minutes.
You know, I Babe changes others. Babe doesn't change, but I think I like Babe in the context of this dirty city, and I like the way that it does seem to make him a little tougher. He's not so naive and stuff. But like that moment with the dog, it's pretty terrifying the way the dog is drowning. But there's also, right before it, Babe is too tired to run from the dog anymore and just stops and turns to the dog. And Miller is like flashing his life experience in like almost strobe cuts. And then Babe just asks the dog why. Like Babe is so wholesome. He can't even understand why this is happening. I think that's also a big part of what's beautiful about this film and why it's so special. It's not just because I'm shocked that they have the shot of the dog drowning or the way that Fleelik rolls across the street when he gets thrown from that car and he's in doggy heaven where he can walk again. Oh my God. It's like, that's so heartbreaking, but it's all the other stuff. Like, God, I love the orangutan. I love Thelonious. I think my favorite part in this movie is when Babe rescues them all and he makes them wait so that he can get dressed. Because his whole character arc is that he's an ape that wants to be a human so bad he feels like he's too dignified to walk around without clothes. I think that's like one of the most beautiful things ever, and it could only happen in a talking animal movie. And I love it with all my heart. It's not just because it's such a hard movie at times. You know, like when the animal control people come to clean out that house, it's shot in like they're like SS officers, you know, like cleaning out a ghetto. It's dark, and it's trying to recall that kind of stuff, and it's rough, but it's also very beautiful. Like Thelonious holding the fishbowl, and then they break it, and so the fish is slowly dying, and you know, Babe saves it at the last second. I think stuff like that is just so amazing that anyone even thought to put this in cash grab sequel to their talking pig movie. You know, they took the opportunity to make a part two, and they went weird with it. They went bold with it, and I admire it greatly for that.
And at times, I feel like, not necessarily in a bad way, but the film almost doesn't care about its own plot. It doesn't completely ruin it throughout the movie, but it jumps from moment to moment where you could easily just kind of cut it as its own scene and show it to someone and be like, here's a weird short movie.
Some of it, yeah, especially the Mickey Rooney stuff. I mean, and by the way, Mickey Rooney in this movie seems like the entire point of him being there is to be weird, you know? He can't, remember how, like, he can't speak? He, like, speaks in a breath language that only his niece understands or granddaughter understands. Like, stuff like that is weird. The dude that keeps kind of saving them with the pig nose, that's really weird. It's weird. It's deep down weird, not just surface weird. There's a lot of that in this movie, and I like it. But to go back to what you're saying, yeah, there's parts of it that are kind of like segmented out like that. The story is not that complicated, really. Babe screws up, has to go to the city, gets separated, and then has to save all his new animal friends. That's pretty much it. So it's, yeah, I guess.
And hijinks ensue.
Sure, yeah, hijinks. There are some hijinks, especially anything involving Miss Hoggett or whatever. That's her name, right?
Yeah.
For sure, because it is still a kids' movie. But even when the hijinks ensue, they're sort of a little coloring outside the lines. The whole thing. The chaos reigns or chaos ensues or whatever it is where she causes that big ruckus downtown. You look at all the background characters. A lot of them are a little weird. I don't know. There's a flavor to this movie that's abnormal through and through.
That was one of the things which reminded me of Mad Max the most. When we went out into the town and you kind of just saw like a barrage of crazy people jumping around and having a circus outside, for lack of a better word. It just felt like a Mad Max movie at that point.
I guess, a little bit. He's really into strange characters in those Mad Max movies, for sure. And there's quite a few strange characters here. And it's a dangerous city. I mean, that's the point of taking the pig off the farm and into a city. And he he makes that a part of how the movie feels and how it works as a narrative. It's a dangerous place. When Fleelik lands in the city, as soon as he land, or not Fleelik, Ferdinand, right? The duck. Yeah. Everyone's shooting at him. That's his introduction to the city. It's an odd, scary, dangerous place. But Babe is able to stay wholesome and survive it and make it better. And I think that's a beautiful story. I think it's great. I love it when the dog that he saves gives him the collar and tells everyone to listen to him and all that. It's wonderful. So yeah, I don't know. I love it.
So all right, one of the weirdest things that I came across as I was reading more and more about people talking about this movie was the concept of it not just being a weird movie for everyone, but the fact that people considered it not that much of a children's movie. Or for the most part, it disguised itself as a children's movie, where some people would even go so far as to say they might be uncomfortable showing this to their children. And throughout the years, movies and Hollywood has always tried to shelter children. Back in the days, there were lots of dark children's movies. Today, they're completely neutered. This movie, even the first Babe movie in itself, isn't that really frightening. There are some frightening moments, but not really that stark. This movie, as you mentioned, has a darkness to it. Do you actually think of this movie as a children's movie, or just as a movie for anyone at that point?
I've always thought of both of them as good, like as being movies for anyone. Same way I think about that, like about the Iron Giant. But they're kids' movies. They're made for children, and any child should be able to watch them. I mean, the first Babe, people don't really challenge its stance as a children's movie, but the threat of death is stronger in that movie than in most kids' films. It's very, very real. Yeah, and they don't cheat that just because it's marketed for kids. This movie takes it quite a bit further, but this movie is also very, very silly at times, and it's a fairy tale. I mean, it's overtly a fable, and so I think that it qualifies on just about every level as what we would define as a kid's film. It's just that it's darker, and it takes the threat of danger to some more extreme lengths. But, you know, when Fleelik does roll away from that car in an extremely violent way and goes to doggy heaven and jumps at butterflies, he comes back and he's fine. He's okay. Nobody dies in the movie, not even the little fish. It's just that it takes you closer to, oh my gosh, I think that fish is gonna die, than kids' movies normally do. A lot closer, really. But I don't think that that's a dangerous thing, and I would show it to a kid. I think a really little kid might become emotionally disturbed. But we all saw E.T. and like it messed everybody up when old E.T. was gray and dying in that drainage ditch or wherever they found him out in the woods. And that messed everybody up when they were really little. We survived, though. We're okay, most of us.
We're okay, and we're better for it. I like that you mentioned E.T. because E.T. was a movie that I grew up on, but weirdly enough, I hadn't seen for a long time up until like around 5 years ago. And when I saw it again, like that moment in itself, I think I completely blocked out emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just was like, that's not in my movie. And I wonder if that's me as a child going, that's scary, I don't want to remember that. But
it's pretty good stuff. I mean, it's well done, and it messes you up when you're little.
It's amazing. I was wondering, just talking about the death and cheating death thing, I was remembering in the first Babe movie, I mean, they make it very clear that death is a true thing that's out there, and it's for all of these animals, especially the animals that have no purpose other than to feed the master.
Mm-hmm. It's not just Babe, like, they go all out.
And I was just thinking about this one little bit where Christmas was coming around and they were questioning pig or duck. Right? And everyone sees the duck come out cooked and everything. and everyone's just assuming Ferdinand is dead, to which Ferdinand just appears and goes, yeah, that was a girlfriend that we never talked about.
Mm-hmm.
That we never got to see and have any emotional connection with. So
he says, like, she was so young and full of life or something like that. And it's like, yeah, it's funny, but, like, no, it's kind of not funny. And when the farmer is about to kill Babe and Babe kind of, like, nibbles a little bit at the end of the shotgun, it's like, that's a little dark, you know? They're pushing it pretty far, and that's the beloved one that no one really challenges as a kid's film. It's there. Babe's mom certainly dies.
Yeah, I mean, it opens with that narration of them saying that the pigs leave to go to a happy place that they never come back from because it's that good, and you just see the truck of meat.
Yeah.
And we know what's going on.
And, you know, George Miller didn't direct the first one, but he was deeply involved in it. And so if what's dark about Babe 2 is Miller's fault, I think you could make a safe assumption that he was also planting some of that stuff in the frank reality of death for these animals in the first one. He seems to be real interested in it.
Yeah. Well, I think that about does it, but I'd like to ask you, as someone who, as you say yourself, likes to find gems that people dismiss or don't even want to interact with to kind of show them that this is something worthwhile, or as you say, too cool for school and you want to school them. Is there anything that you feel we haven't quite touched on about these movies that you'd like to mention?
Well, a lot of people think that means that I like bad movies, but...
No, I never wanted to go there, but okay.
Sometimes I do, you know, like I like interesting movies, and sometimes what makes a movie interesting also makes it not really good, if such a thing can be defined. But I like when movies surprise me, but I also like when movies are set up for lowered expectations and then they exceed them. So I think that's why I like a lot of direct-to-video action films, or I really like when I find one that's not just passable or good but excellent. Like Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning is a movie that I've been talking about a lot for the last couple of years because it is excellent. It's a movie that I didn't even understand at all the first time I saw it, and I didn't like it. I had to come around to it, but it's great. And so it gives me no, you know, better joy than to tell people about them, because we're movie fans. They pride themselves on being able to watch movies that normal people that make mainstream hits happen are not interested in. But they also have their own prejudices, and it blocks them from liking or spending their energy and time with what they think is beneath them. And sometimes they're right. Most times they're right. But sometimes they're wrong. And if I perceive that that's happening, I want to make a big stink about it. I really don't think I have to with Babe anymore. I really think in the community that I know, no one has to explain Babe, Pig in the City. It's known that it's a movie that was kind of misunderstood and now has a cult around it, you know? It's not like someone trying to defend, I don't know, Repo Man or something. Everyone would be like, why are you defending that movie? We know the score. Babe has had its day in court since its initial, it had its appeal. And I think it's won. Most people I know about it and know that it's special. So, you know, I don't have to fight the good fight on it anymore. And so, yeah, so I don't know what's next for me, like, as far as that goes. I never will till I see it. It's becoming harder because I'm not really discovering. I'm either watching old movies I feel bad that I haven't seen yet, which means they already have their reputation, or I'm watching, like, new movies for work. I'm not discovering things that haven't already been discovered, I guess, lately. I'm not digging that deep, except for direct-to-video action stuff. And sometimes that's really great, but I haven't found a super gem since, Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning, I think, was the last one. And that was several years ago. But some of those Jean-Claude Van Damme, you ever watch Jean-Claude Van Damme stuff?
I've seen some of his, like, 80s and 90s stuff, and I've seen a couple of, like, the bigger releases for the recent stuff.
Well, but like,
I've never really gone straight into the direct-to-video world.
It's good. He's become an excellent actor.
I saw that the Jungle one just hit Netflix, and I was considering watching it, but I don't know.
Well, it doesn't count. I mean, it's okay. He's not in a ton of it, but he's really funny in it. He is really, really good in it. But you have to, like, be willing to watch 20 minutes of him and, like, 100 minutes or no, like 70 minutes maybe of comedy that doesn't involve him at all. So if you want all Van Damme, it's not a good bet. But if you really like Van Damme, it's good.
And
but
I did see a trailer the other day for the movie about someone stealing his kidney, and that
Pound of Flesh,
fantastic.
Pound of Flesh looks good. I'm so excited for it. So that's a good example.
So there you go. Like, herein lies the thing. Like, I think Jean-Claude Van Damme, my Jean-Claude Van Damme is Jason Statham. Well, I will go into any shitty Jason Statham movie
for the sake of
I love Jason Statham movies.
I mean, I just paused Wildcard to do this podcast. As soon as I'm done, I'm going to continue watching the brand new Jason Statham.
He's... when I'm done this podcast.
Mm-hmm. So there's two people that are definitely going to watch Wildcard. And I see every Statham movie. He's great. And he keeps getting better. That one he made called Redemption, that's his best one.
Oh, Homefront is pretty fantastic.
Homefront's good. Redemption is the real deal, though. It's like a drama. It's barely even an action film. And he's excellent in it. It's an excellent film.
It's the only Jason Statham movie with none love. So yeah, that was the episode. Once again, I want to thank Evan for coming on and talking with me. He was a delight, and I really hope he enjoyed Wildcard. I think he did. I think he posted it on Twitter. It was an interesting one. I still haven't watched Wildcard. I'll probably watch that now when I'm done editing this up and putting this online. So yeah, thanks so much for listening. As always, you can find the show on iTunes, on Stitcher. You can find it. I like to use Pocket Cast. You can find it in there. It is the Movies We Love podcast. You can find it when you search for Movies We Love, or even my name, Andrew Robinson, or even G-Man Reviews, the website. You should be able to find it. Go and rate, review, subscribe to the show. Feel free to leave a comment on the site at gmanreviews.com. And thank you so much for listening. And have a wonderful morning, evening, good night, and afternoon, or even a siesta, dependent on where you are in the world and what time it is. But thank you so much for listening.